everyone. My name is Belinda Granger, and I'm the professional liaison for Challenge Family. I'm also known throughout the triathlon world as being a bit of a mother hen to the pro athletes. Of course, given the current circumstances, I've been thinking about the athletes a lot lately. So we came up with the idea of Coffee Calls with Belinda, which basically gives me and you an opportunity to check in with them all and see how they're all going. So welcome to the official Challenge Family podcast. I think it's time for a coffee. Okay, welcome back to Coffee Calls with Belinda. Today's special guest came into the sport with a bang and hasn't really looked back ever since. I'm sure you can already guess who I am about to talk to, but welcome, Cam Wirth.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Belinda. A bang. I don't know about that. I was, it was a bit of a bang, I guess. I rocked up at Kona as an age group with a broken foot. That certainly went bang that day. But no, I love the sport. I love the sport, obviously. I love competing in it. And of all the sports I've done, it's the one that gets my blood pumping the hardest. So it's a privilege to be a part of it.
Awesome. Now, listen, Cam, I'm not sure if you can remember this, but I actually first met you many, many, many years ago before you'd gotten to the sport of triathlon. You were obviously a pro cyclist at this particular point in your career. And it was in the very back of the Noosa Triathlon transition. So for people out there that don't know, Noosa Triathlon is the largest Olympic distance triathlon in Australia and one of the largest in the world. And you were racing in a celebrity team. So you had an Olympic swimmer, you had yourself, and you had an Olympic runner. Of course, I was in a pleb team, I think, with my husband. Yeah. You were doing the bike, I was doing the run. And I remember you coming up to me and asking, how long do you think it's going to take for my swimmer to do the swim? Because I'm desperate for some Allen's snakes.
Snakes, so, I was struggling.
Snakes or lollies or sweets. And and I told you, oh, look, it should be, you've got 15 minutes up your sleeve. And, of course, you said sweet. And I remember you running out of transition, which was a pretty damn long run, to the local 7-Eleven to get yourself a bag of snakes. Do you remember?
I do. Yeah, I was. I was there with the V8 supercar guys, and we'd had some big nights, like everyone does. And I don't know if I'd been to bed, and I certainly didn't have time for breakfast. And I knew I needed to fix the situation real quick. Thank God for the invention of Alan's snakes, and Red Frogs is my other go-to. So that and a Gatorade and. That'll at least get you through the morning before you crash out, around midday and have to have a bit of a nap.
And I think that day you still had the fastest bike split by a long, long way. So the snakes definitely helped.
They've certainly never let me down over the years. I've relied on them and Mars bars many a occasion. I certainly see food as a source of fuel.
Love it.
Nothing more.
Oh, I love it. Now, listen, Cam, obviously you are from Australia. I know you spend a lot of time here on the Sunshine Coast because your father lives in Coolum, which is just down the road from Noosa. You also come from Tassie. Well, Lord Howe Island to start with, isn't it? Gosh, you've got it's so hard to keep up with you. You're from Lord Howe Island?
No, from Tassie. I moved to Lord Howe when I was like 4 or 5.
Right.
Yeah. And then went back to Tassie for high school and finished finished high school there and also did university there. But then, of course, I've been overseas for far out. I'm starting to get old. I've been coming overseas for different sports for almost 20 years.
Wow.
Not quite that long. Yeah, close, actually. Yeah, 2001, almost 20 years.
Wow. Where are you now?
19. Holy mackerel.
Spring chicken.
Yeah.
Where are you now?
I'm in Andorra. So I live in Andorra. This is where I'm a resident now. So given the current climate, being a non-resident of Australia, still obviously a citizen, still proudly represent Australia, but, I live in Europe because, I want to be the best I can be in this sport. And out of respect to the sport and the great athletes I have to compete with, being here in this you know, especially here with Girona. So, of course, Jan, Dave McNamee, you know, a bunch of other guys just down the road. Obviously, you know, the guys, Sebi and Freddie Van Leer, the guys I can race week in, week out, just puts me in the epicenter of the level of the sport. And I think that's been a key driver in me as an Australian being able to get to where I've got to in the sport and the space of time that I have. Because, yeah, obviously I much prefer to live in Australia. I love Australia. You know, it's my home. Yeah. It's where you grow up, your family, your friends. It's, you know, it's tough being on the other side of the world, but also it makes you, well, for me, it makes me hungrier because I don't want to fail. You know, I really don't want to fail. I love coming home and, you know, being able to share the success stories and whatever of what's going on and, you know, and making, and obviously your friends are a lot nicer to you and appreciate the fact that you got to be away if you're actually going over and kicking ass. They obviously don't want to talk to you if you come home and you're a loser. So
exactly. Oh, that's true. Yeah. A little bit of pressure there.
Yeah. So, I'm in Andorra. We live here. And, at the moment I can't even come back to my own country, which is a pretty incredible, you know, circumstances, really.
I know for a lot of friends who are over in Europe at the moment or over in the States, it is a really strange feeling. I mean, it's a feeling that none of us have experienced before. And even here in Australia now, obviously I've lived in Noosa for 18, 19 years, but if I want to go back to Sydney, I literally can't right now.
Yeah. Tassie's even more locked down than the rest.
Shut up shop, that's right. Yeah,
they're going it alone. So,
you know, different part of Australia, not really. So I've seen maps where they've actually left Tassie off.
And we don't mind that. We feel like we're good enough to be our own country. But, you know, it's interesting. I mean, Andorra is it's a principality. Obviously it's also a good place for tax, but there's, I think there's 50 or 60 somewhere in there world tour cyclists that live here. And a lot of MotoGP guys, a lot of motorsport guys, particularly rally, some golfers. So it's, I guess, similar to Monaco with sort of a different demographic. They have the Formula One players, the tennis players, and a few of the cyclists. But we're up in the mountains, but, you know, we're not part of the EU. So we have a border that borders with France and one that borders with Spain, which is also shut. So they've obviously shut us off from Europe and... you know, they've sort of said to expect that to be the case for 3 to 6 months. So we're not only, you know, we're in here, but it's a wonderful country. If I could describe it for anyone that really has no idea where it is or what it is, it's basically a very small version of Switzerland. It's extremely well, you know, architecturally built and in the mountains. And, you know, we live at 1,500 meters or 5,500 feet. So, you know, quite high elevation, fresh air. It's pretty spectacular spot. So as long as we get the situation under control in here, which they believe they're, you know, well and truly on the way with that, you know, life will go back to normal pretty much for us. We just won't have the tourists that we normally have. So
it might actually
be quite nice for a little while.
Well, you know, I'm from Noosa and we're fairly similar and we call it the little Noosa bubble and we rely on tourism for sure. But it's quite nice having Noosa back to ourselves. Obviously this time of year with Easter holidays coming up, that's a huge time for Noosa, as I'm sure it is for you guys.
Yeah.
Actually quite nice. You know, you go for a walk now and there's just nobody.
Yeah, I mean, I think just flabbergasting how quickly stuff can change. I mean, it was Friday, you know, basically almost 2 weeks ago now. I was out on I went on a long run this time of the year, you know, pretty nothing too specific training wise. I generally, it's just the first few months of the year just getting fit again to the point where then you can start to do some work and handle some proper load. And I just went out for a long run and I even have we've got the gym is just down the few K down the street from home. I actually just I've got a locker there with all my swim gear. So I have my Speedos on underneath the running shorts. And I thought, right, I'll go and do 30, 35 K or something. And then finish at the gym, you know, have a quick shower, jump in the pool, do a few laps, flush the legs out. And Fallon can pick me up and I'll go home. And And in the time that, you know, I'd done my run and got to the gym was the staff all came running out, Cameron, you can't come in, you can't come in, you know, we've shut the country. And I was like, what? You know, like
that morning,
everything, Fallon was in town shopping and, you know, the dog goes to swimming training twice a week. There's this dog therapy pool lady here. And within 2 hours, all of a sudden, it was shut. And all you could do was go to grocery stores and whatever. And that all happened in the space of a run, you know. I was like, the world changed, you know, in the space of my 35K run. I was just like, wow.
I know.
That's nuts, you know. I was standing there ready for a swim and I couldn't even go for a swim, you know. No. Like the concept of that was very incredible to face, you know. So,
It's definitely something, it's unprecedented, obviously something that I've never seen and hope never to see in my lifetime.
Yeah. We
had a similar thing here in Noosa where I woke up that morning, I rang the pool was open, and they said, just to let you know, Belinda, we are expecting the call. But they had no idea when that call was going to come, and, of course, it ended up coming at 11 a.m. that morning, and then by 12 they were closed. End of story.
Yeah. 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 No, it's just yeah, just incredible. So, yeah, but here, though, I think the difference between here and what I witnessed from watching the rest of the world is we actually listen. We're very much like Switzerland in that regard too. Yes. Probably like China, and people have been great. I mean, supermarkets remained open. We've never had anything. You know, people have just shopped like normal. Our supermarkets are all fully stocked.
We haven't had the
no hoarders here. Everyone's just going about their daily business, but everyone stays inside, stays out of their way. It's been, you know, really well received here, and we know at some point it'll be over. We're all just waiting for that to happen.
just a matter of playing the waiting game now. Now, Cam, are you over there? Are you in Andorra with your team, with Team Ineos? Are they all there with you?
There's a few of the guys here. There's around 10 guys from the team that do live in Andorra, but a few of them are Spanish, and then the rest of the Colombians and the South American guys. So Egan obviously was here. He was here up until last year. I haven't seen him. He hasn't been here yet because he came back, was meant to race, and now he's gone back to Colombia. Sosa, Johnny Narvez, and Sebastian Henao, they've all gone back to Colombia or you know, South America. But there's young Pavel Sivakov, the Russian kid, and Teo Gegenhardt, young British guy, Amador is still here in ICE. There's still four of us, and another Spanish guy has gone back to his hometown because he was his wife was due to have a baby in April, and they were worried about being not able to leave, so they got out so they could have the baby with his family. So, we're all over the place. Obviously, there's quite a few guys in Monaco. But the largest contingent of Ineos, of the team, do actually live here in Andorra, which is pretty cool when we're all here. Yeah. So we've got a good support network here.
And so, obviously, no group rides at the moment. You are still allowed to go out on the road, but you've decided as a team, out of respect for the rules, that you won't. So you've been doing all of your cycling since the announcement indoor.
Yeah. So what happened was they actually originally, when they announced it on the Friday, the Saturday sort of, you know, they let it go, and you know, everyone was out exercising and doing that, and that was sort of fine. The cyclists actually caused a bit of an uproar on the Sunday. The movie star team, and I don't no shame in naming the geese, but they all went out as a group. There was probably 10 of them, and there was one of our team in that group. Amador, I don't know how long he was with them, but he tagged along, and we've got bright orange training kit, so he stuck out like dog's testicles. Anyway, you know, the photo went all over the principality of how, you know, the cyclists were disrespecting it. I mean, myself and Teo and Pavel were out doing our intervals, and Simon Clark, but we all stayed on our own and did them on our own, did the ride on our own as what we were believed was sort of was agreed. There was the uproar, and so It was actually Jack Haig, Australian guy, who sort of led the movement, put a group together and on WhatsApp in a chat and just said, look, this is the situation. We're getting some bad feedback. The government can't ban us from riding, but we'd like to us to set an example. And obviously everyone said, absolutely. You know, this is not a time for us to be feeling entitled because we're professionals or anything like that. That set an example. And it, within a day, no one rode on the road. And, the big thing was, as we all said, you know, our hospital, we don't get assistance from the European Union. You know, we're not part of the EU. So we are 100% reliant on our own medical system. So if particularly that group, you know, all 12 of them, if someone at the front had a crash and all of them went down and they all ended up in hospital, I mean, that would have potentially been something that could have ended up making this a catastrophic here in Andorra, you know, as the positive cases started. So we just said no, and everyone's adhered to the rule and not gone outside obviously since, and the authorities and the government have been fantastic in that, saying once we have things under control, you know, we'll let you know. You'll be able to go back out and be on your own. And you know, it's funny, I actually had the conversation with my mum this morning. She's in Tassie, and I got her a new bike, a Pinarello, recently, and she loves it. And nice. She's been riding a lot with all the friends, and she was said, oh, we're going for a ride on tomorrow. And I said, oh yeah, really? And she said, yeah, but we've agreed that if anyone's got a sniffle or a runny nose or something, you know, we'll go home. I said, mum, do you not understand, like, the reason why that is not right? She said, oh, well, you know, if we're sick, we won't spread it. I said, no, mum, it's if one of you ends up, you know, crashing or doing something and ends up needing to go to hospital.
Right.
And I was amazed that my mum didn't understand the gravity of that. And I think, I think the fact that I'm in Europe and you see what's happening in Italy, you see what's happening in Spain, you see what's happening in France. My wife's American, so we're watching what's going on there. I'm much more in touch with what's going on or what can happen. Yeah. And obviously once I explain it to mum, she's like, oh, well, I won't be going riding tomorrow. Then ask me how to you know, if she could borrow my home trainer I got down there in Tassie. So, if I really just wish, I mean, I did that video for a challenge, you know, for the family yesterday. And the thing is, every country has their own rules and, yeah, you have to respect them. But in our case here, it was a case of, look, that's just respect the people that need help. And at the moment, we don't need to be out on the road on our bikes, and we don't need to be increasing the risk of us being in hospital for something unrelated. This epidemic, this pandemic, this problem, you know, it's simply a medical system, you know, meltdown issue. Meltdown, that's all it is. You know, it's overrunning the hospitals with sick people, a lot of people dying, and the system collapsing. Yeah. And because of that, because of the fear of that and the fear of the contagion of that and how quickly it can spread, they've got to shut everything down as a result of that. But the crux of the issue is the fear of medical systems collapsing. So the more actions each of us can take to eliminate the possibility of A, getting sick, and B, you know, getting injured or needing medical care, the better. Simple as that. You know, it's really straightforward.
And I mean, that's applicable to every single country all around the world right now, regardless of how good or bad or poor.
Exactly. Every single country, every single person, every single age group, every single demographic. Yeah. The extra bit each of us can do to just stay out of each other's way, avoid any potential contagion, potential getting sick or injured or whatever else, even from other means, the better. And that's another reason it leads to racing. Of course, the spread and all of that. But the other thing that comes with racing, and this is where the Olympics, I mean, I was speaking to the guys at Nike the other day, and they've been really worried about the athletes because, you know, they were worried about everyone stressing about trying to train for the games when you couldn't. A lot of people couldn't. So you're having to either sneak out or, you know, sneak around or do whatever. But the mental stress, which is the adrenal fatigue, yeah, and that absolutely runs you down, mm-hmm, and then all of a sudden you're susceptible to getting it, and then you're putting more stress on the system. So, you know, the Olympics, yeah, the Olympics had to be cancelled. I mean, training hard for something like that right at this point in time is not what you should be doing. You know, yeah, you need to have your immune system as strong as possible, yeah, because
so keep that fit might be healthy, not yeah, go over
keep,
that's
keep
right
active, absolutely. Yep. Keep active, keep fit and healthy, but feel good, feel great, feel the best you've ever felt, so that if maybe you do end up, you know, coming across the contagion somewhere, your body's got the antibodies, the resilience, the strength to kick it to the curb and not catch it. So, yeah, we've just got to really work as one big team. And, I mean, sadly, it's not in human nature to think of others too much.
And we see this in the news every night, some of the foods in the supermarkets, and, you know, not just within Australia but all around the world. And it's just, you know, there are certain things I've seen on TV where I'm embarrassed to be a human being, just some of the behaviours from so many people. And I know people get desperate, but it's just mind-boggling to think that people are fighting. I mean, imagine these people in 5 years' time looking back at these, you know, instances, fighting over toilet paper, fighting over dog food. I mean, how do you even come to terms with that? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's the X problem, is, you know, the human element of it, and how that's going to transpire. So, yeah, all I can do is plead with everyone to, to do the right thing and do your bit. I mean, that's all you can do. I mean,
absolutely,
it's very hard to, you know, you can obviously offer to help and do whatever you can, but that's also very difficult, and in itself adds to the risk of contagion, especially if it's a hands-on sort of assistance. You know, you really need to leave it to the people that are experienced at this stuff to deal with that. Yeah. And you know, and then that leads us to, you know, people like Felix today,
that brings me to a point. You know, when they announced last week that, you know, obviously Roth cannot go ahead, which I remember I sat down and actually cried, literally cried, understand it was the only decision and the best decision to be made, but that doesn't mean you can't be upset about it. But when you heard about Roth being cancelled, obviously you were on the start list for the race this year. Yeah. What were your initial thoughts?
Oh, well, to be honest, I mean, I guess at the moment you expect stuff to be, you're expecting this to sort of happen. What struck me with this announcement, you know, that Felix made, you know, a few days ago, was that how he cared about, you know, how he got it. He got the situation. He's like, holy crap, you know, everyone is struggling through this. This is a massive event. This is a massive thing for a lot of people. You know, this is their life. And I don't know if we can hold this thing, so I need to make a call as early as possible out of respect to these people to be able to deal with it, you know, because, it's really hard to take. I mean, it's one of the biggest events. It is, you know, it's the biggest event as far as an event goes in our sport, you know, as far as fans go, as far as the party goes, as far as the festival goes. Yeah, Kona has its own, you know, uniqueness of being the world championship, but Roth is the biggest festival in the sport. You know, there's no two ways about that. It is undoubtedly. And for someone like Felix to stand up there and take the lead, it shows why it is. You know, to me, that was probably the thing. I mean, of course, everyone was upset. I mean, you're upset, Felix is upset, his whole family's upset, you know, the other thousands of people are upset. But to me, what was so impressive was how he handled that and took the lead, being the biggest sport, you know, biggest event in the sport, and saying, look, this is a tough time. We all have to make tough decisions. And not only that, but I'm going to give all of you your money back because I feel terrible that you can't come and do the event. You know, which is something he didn't have to do. That was just, I was like, wow. And then I immediately thought, you know what, Felix? Next year, that is going to be one of the biggest sporting events on the planet, you know, because Germany is going to be so damn excited for Roth to be back. That little town and the little towns around it and whoever else's houses get cleared out for the other few hundred thousand, there'll probably be 500,000 or a million, who knows. is gonna be, not that he did it to be repaid. He didn't do it for that. No. He didn't do it because he thought next year I'll get more people around and all this. No, he did it because he just cares, and he's a great human, and it's a great family, and they've got an incredible event. But that is gonna for a long, long time, or for as long as they want it to be, it'll be the premier event in our sport. And and I have, as you know, first opportunity to go was 2018, and I haven't missed it since. And and I hope I never miss one while I'm competing.
You're climbing up that podium as well, so
yeah,
we need you back there next year. We want to see you on top on that top step. I think you're due for that.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I've had they've been, both times I've turned up, I'd raced an Ironman the week before the first year, and still managed to have one of the best races I had, largely because of the enthusiasm of the crowd and the quality of the field. You know, obviously I had Sebi for company on the bike, and then obviously Jesse Thomas and Joe Skipper was there, and of course Andy Dreets, but I mean, I find him a bit boring. He's a bit of a boring racer to me, but the way the other guys do it's great. Yeah, sorry, mate, but you're boring as bat crap, and obviously no one will ever forgive you for what you did in Kona, so it doesn't really matter what you achieve in the sport. But and then of course last year I'd crashed my bike a few weeks before, which you knew, and had a broken nose, a broken rib, so it was a bit out of sorts. But you know, and I had a terrible swim. I mean, Lucy passed me. It wasn't like she just caught me, like, near the end. She passed me not long after the turnaround, halfway.
Wow.
And so I was it took me nearly 30 or 40K to catch her on the bike. I was so far behind. I mean, I'm not a great swimmer anyway, but, you know, when I have sort of one arm, when you've got a broken bone, it's quite hard. So if you're a bad swimmer, you're in fresh water, no wetsuit, and you got one arm, yeah, you're going to struggle, especially against not let alone against my field, but there was a freight train coming up behind us. To get myself back in the race, and then to get on that run, and as you saw, I really went for it at the start, really paid for it in the middle. But once, the best part was, you know, I paid for it out on the canal still, and then when you start to come into town, I was still in third. I had Bart chasing me down. Obviously, we'd been second in Kona the year before. He had, I think, the fastest run split ever.
That's right.
Ross, like a 2:36 or something. And I had Dave McNamee behind that, who's another 2:30 something runner. And frig me, that crowd. Like, I remember when I passed the area where the grandstand was, about 10K to go here or there. I had about a minute. And I was like, nah, I want to be on that podium. And I just gritted the teeth and I basically held Bart and Dave for that last 10K. It was incredible. I mean, I think for sure that was my best performance last year, considering everything. And it was one where that crowd and that energy of that event and that town and the whole shebang, just gets the best out of you. So
it really does. Yeah,
a lot of people are going to miss it, that's for sure. But pure class, Felix and the family and. We'll obviously all be back. So
absolutely. And I think, you know, similar to the announcement with the Olympics obviously being cancelled this year, but on for 2021, I think 2021 is shaping up to be one hell of a year already.
Yeah, and absolutely. And that's kind of in line with what they're doing with, you know, the shutdowns and whatever. I mean, respecting the situation, this year we've all got this fight on our hands, and there's only so much fight in humans. So giving everyone the opportunity to just get through this, get things back on track, you know, I'm sure there'll be some racing. There'll be some big races this year, but it's going to be different. You know, it doesn't matter which way you look at it. It's going to be the year of that. So, you know, people are going to be keen next year. You know, an Olympic year also always heightens everything, everything around it. And so, yeah, it's just a bit of a reset. You know, we're just pushing everything back a year, but it'll make it even bigger. You know, which is incredible, because as I say, the Olympic years are always the biggest. So bring on 2021.
2021.
Hopefully we'll get some stuff in this year, and you know, there's still potential for some exciting stuff towards the end of the year, and everyone's going to be pretty keen to to get out and do some stuff once this thing under control.
Talking about races, Cam, obviously you are now a professional cyclist / triathlete. I'm not sure what one I should put first, whether it should be triathlete / cyclist or cyclist / triathlete.
Yeah.
But in regards to cycle racing, is it looking likely that you guys will have any grand tours or have any big races to do this year? I mean, I don't want to say Tour de France, but, you know, is it something that you and the team and the cycling fraternity are still positive will go ahead?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely planning for it, sure. So they feel that they can get all three of them in. You know, the Tour of Spain sits in, you know, in August. So, you know, so that sort of pushes back. I mean, everyone's looking at, you know, China is a pretty good example. And from when it sort of gets a bit gnarly, it takes a few months until things start to settle down and you can start. I mean, they're playing sports again, they're basketball and soccer and different things. And so here in Europe, you know, it's sort of no different. Originally, they were sort of hoping for June. But now there's sort of, they're giving themselves a bit more of a cushion and expecting things to potentially come back online in, you know, potentially in the summer, you know, middle of the summer, so late, July, late August.
Yeah.
And so that would give them time to put the tour on, you know, pretty close to when it normally would have been.
Yeah.
There's certainly some apprehension to have that as the first race back, but
I can understand that.
Yeah. Just with regard to athletes getting ready and different things, but it's also, that's what I'm saying, it's a unique year. There's going to be some different things. I think that everyone has to work together, you know, and there's going to be some give and take. And then there's obviously time, the Vuelta's scheduled, the Tour of Spain's scheduled for the end of August into September. And then, you know, still time to put the Tour of Italy on, where Italy obviously is the hardest hit country. Absolutely. At the moment, you know, France, to be fair, seems like they're really getting things under control there. And they're very determined to get it under control by even tightening lockdown even more, even though they are looking, you know, like they're doing well. Spain is still pretty out of control. So if you look at like that, then the sequence of when they want to put the big tours on, because those tours are a celebration of the country. And so they are a wonderful thing.
Celebration of the world. I mean,
they are. Absolutely.
Around the world, whether you're a cycling enthusiast or not, we all sit down and watch the Tour de France all the time.
That's it. People are going to be starved for television, for entertainment, because we got none at the moment. It's incredible. There's no live sport.
Nothing.
So that's what they're looking at. And then obviously amongst that, they want to give priority to the bigger races, so the big monuments and so forth. So that's easy to put them on in weekends. And then there's other events that, you know, if you take Challenge Roth, for example, you know, Felix obviously feels that they can take a year away and come back, you know, better. They will. They'll come back better. They're a great event. They've got great footing. They've had great success, and they're able to do that. Some cycling races, I believe, Romandy for sure, just to use an example, Switzerland, they're obviously probably pretty well funded and pretty stable that if they get cancelled, they'll be able to have them. And then there's a lot of other smaller races that are saying, listen, if we don't have the event and our sponsors don't do this, then we're done. And so the teams and the organisation are trying to do all they can to facilitate, you know, that on a needs basis, which is fantastic. And I know originally the UCI, you know, they publicly stated that the season could go to the end of October. Well, I know for a fact that the riders and the teams, I mean, we're all happy to race till the end of December. I mean, we haven't done anything for 4 months. I mean, why the hell, if there's days left in the year and there's races to be done, we're racers.
We're racing. Yeah.
And the other thing is what this will do to athletes and their mentality. I mean, the other day in our group chat here with all the cyclists, I said, I think there's 56 professional cyclists here in Andorra. Not all of us are here right now, but I'd say at least 40 of us are here. And Theo Gegenhardt put up, Dan Martin, put up a thing saying that, you know, we're all meant to race. Most of us would have raced Tour of Catalunya, which is starting yesterday or on Monday, whenever he put the photo up. Right. And it was snowing.
Oh.
He put up a thing of snow. He said, oh, God, it might have been a tough day. And Teo Gegenhardt put up a photo of Andy Hadspin at the Giro. It's quite an iconic photo, racing in the snow back in the 80s or 90s. 90s, I guess it was. I should know more about the sport, but I'm not good. I change sports too often.
So too often, that's right.
Yeah.
but to remember.
And I just put it to the guys. I said, yeah, I doubt there'll be too many people wanting to bring up the extreme weather protocol when we start again. And everyone said, no way, I'd race in anything today, like anything.
Mindset completely changes.
Yeah. we have become quite protected and quite nurtured and all of that compared to the old, good old days. The old days. Stories you hear and whatever.
You're saying that they're all a bit soft these days, or maybe a little?
When I look at what it used to be like, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and so I think it could be good for – I think this could be a good little kick in the pants for the sport or for sports in general.
Yeah.
You know, make us appreciate what we have.
Yeah.
You know, when you never know how much you appreciate something until they take it away.
Isn't that true?
Yeah.
Oh,
far yeah. So it's an interesting time for me because, I guess I'm a bit more eager to get as much information as I can because – yeah, I'm going to have two sports that are trying to catch up, you know, trying to cram in races and put in events.
In the span of about three months.
So if you thought me racing 8 Ironmans a couple of years ago was a big deal.
Lunacy.
That'll be nothing, I think, compared to what I've got going on in, ideally going on, assuming everything goes back to normal. In August through to December, I'll be happy as a pig in mud. I'll be full gas. So
and so, obviously, Cam, the plan is to be part of Team Ineos and to race as much as you can, and also to be a professional triathlete and racing as much as you can to the end of the year as well. That is the plan, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, this year the plan in an ideal world was that I would focus on. Well, I was going to do the Collins Cup. Well, originally it was the championship. Then they had the Collins Cup. I was going to be there regardless. That would have been basically my first race for the year. Then I was going to race Roth. You know, I was really excited. I mean, pretty incredible field. Jan, obviously Sebi, everyone. It would have been, insane. And then obviously heaps of time to prepare for Kona. And leading up to championship was basically mainly the only racing I would do would have been on the road, with the team. So I would have raced for, 4 months, probably one or two races a month with them, more just to and when needed, I was more of a fill-in role because I'm always training with the guys anyway. Dave Brailsford, they had a spot on the team and he just said to me, listen, would you be interested in filling it? Because we feel you could, do a really good, you're always ready. You're training with the guys
That's true.
You fit in with the team. You love competing. Are you interested? I said, absolutely. Why not? That sounds awesome. And so that was the plan. Of course, then, and we discussed, once everything got thrown in the air, the team it's 30 guys, so that's really important. I had to make sure I didn't let the team down once everything came back online. And at that point, when we were talking about date changes with Roth and so forth and championship, we had to look at that and see how it was all going to fit in. And we didn't know, because no one knows, but, so that was a bit of a bugger, but until the season kind of got flipped on its head, it sounded like a pretty good strategy to be able to focus on Roth and then go away. There was also an option to do maybe Tour of Germany or something in August as a bit of a sharpen up for Kona later as well, maybe throw in for a couple more races. We were just going to play that a little bit by ear. But, the priority was use some racing to prepare for Roth, have a bit of a break, and then get ready for Kona with maybe a couple more races leading into that. So, yeah.
Brings me to my first question. We've actually asked some of our age group athletes out there to email in some questions.
Yeah.
And we did get a question from one, and he's like, he said, what is he doing with Ineos? I've never been this confused in my life. I had a little bit of a chuckle because, I think you confuse a lot of people a lot of the times, because they just, unless they know you personally, they just don't get you as an athlete. I don't think they realize that you're just one of those freak athletes that's able to be racing, training all year long. And actually, the more you race, the better you get.
Yeah.
Am I correct?
Yeah, I mean, I love exercising. I mean, I love being active, and I've never really liked being pigeonholed with everyone else. Like, I mean, I love rowing, but I kind of didn't really like that you were, I don't know, you know, you're just part of the whole group. You know, I kind of always wanted to be a bit different. So it's probably why I didn't last long there, although I had some good success. Obviously, cycling the first time, I kind of didn't really fit in super well there once I kind of just became one of the other cyclists. I didn't really sort of like that. And then, you know, I got into triathlon, and obviously I saw an opportunity where I could do it my own way, or the way I believed in, which, you know, which is another point. I was speaking to Freddie Van Leerd recently, who, funnily enough, I bring him up, he asked me the same question, and he did. And he said to me, not in a, oh, what are you doing? This seems ridiculous. In a, mate, what do you, you know, he's always been great to me. Freddie was one of the first pros that ever reached out and sent me a message and said, you know, welcome to the sport. You're great for the sport. I love, you know, your attitude. But, you know, just an absolute, has always just been so lovely to me. And I've never heard anyone say a bad word about Freddie. But he just said, sort of, you know, what's the plan? And I said, well, you know, this and this. But I said, to be honest, Freddie, it doesn't really matter what your plan is. You know, as long as you've got a plan and you believe in it, then you're probably going to be okay. And he said, in this sport, that is so true, because we are all so different. The same thing will not work for any of us. You know, we all have our own idea of what we, how to do it. And the sport is so hard and absolutely requires so much work that if you don't believe in what you're doing, you're really wasting your time. You know, you're pushing crap uphill. So I guess my answer to the question is, you know, I've always dreamed of being able to do multiple sports at once. That's something I've always wanted to do. And, you know, obviously since I started triathlon, you know, you are doing three different sports at once. But, you know, once I then got involved with the guys at INEOS, you know, and they're supporting me and got the same sponsors, etc., spending a lot of time around the team, I thought, you know, we've obviously been talking about it for a couple of years, and then finally the opportunity came up, and let's face it, who wouldn't say yes? I mean, far out, it's the best cycling team, you know, really ever, if you look at what they've done at the tour. I get on great with the guys, I get on great with the staff, they've been incredible to me, they give me so much self-belief in what I'm doing, and are so supportive. Yeah, why not? That's really it. You know, why not? And we feel like it you know, what I love about it is it's reminded me how to hurt myself. You know, I got a taste of it when I attempted an ITU race. Just before the race, people running around, warming up, doing, it was like a CrossFit Games, guys doing chin-ups off trees and burpees and bloody jumps, and I was like, whoa, I am in for an ass kicking here. Like, they were just so fired up, and I was just sitting there like I normally would before an Ironman. Swim's a swim, it'll sort it out, you know, I'll deal with it, I'll get into it on the bike if I have a bad swim, and then just run, you know, hold on the run. Anyway, sure enough, just got absolutely trowed. I got absolutely flogged. Now, going back to a bike race, it had been 6 years almost since I'd been in the World Tour. Just those power surges, it looks easy, and you can train with the guys, but the thing is, when you're training, it's controlled. When you're racing, you're having to go as fast as whoever's on the front is going, and that is never the pace that you want to be going. You're constantly stretched, and the first 2 days of my racing, the first one was the Cadell Evans race, which, you know, was good. I mean, I was certainly at the front a lot more than I was at the back, and we had a great race as a team. The next race I did in Algarve, the first, but I was empty at Cadell's. Like, once we got to about 3 hours or so, I literally couldn't pedal. Like, I was just so dead. Those power surges just absolutely killed me. I just hadn't done anything like it for so long. And as much as we think I'm a good cyclist, like, I'm good at a very specific task now. And not only that, it's almost a jinx being sort of, I guess, one of the ones that sort of, I guess, sets, I feel like a dick saying this, but sets a standard because yeah. I'm in control of the effort. I mean, if you saw in Kona, even in Roth, you know, with Sebi, they just sit behind me now. I mean, they let me set the pace. Crazy. Like, you know, they all just follow me around. So if they can, and so I've not pushing myself, you know, I'm never exerting myself. I'm always being controlled. And so all of a sudden you're happy to keep, and it just completely like, just completely like lights out on my legs. But then it was a 5-day stage race. The next race by the second day was a little bit better. You know, I was able to get over a couple of climbs and beat more around middle of the field. And then by the last day, I was actually pretty close, you know, much closer to the front than the back, or the second last day. But then the interesting thing was the time trial, where you'd think I'd do quite well. It was only 20K. Right. And I ended up getting smashed. I mean, Rowan Dennis put like 2 minutes into me. I was like 60th. And but the thing was though, I had a great start and had good speed, but after about 2 or 3 minutes, when you start to hurt, I'd forgotten what it was like to then just suffer for 20 minutes because I just never do it.
Yep.
I would instantly go, oh, okay, you better back off here on this hill. You're going to blow up. And I'd back off. And then you go, oh, wait a minute, you've only got 15K to go. Push it harder. Oh, it hurts again. Back it off again. Oh, now I'm getting close to the end. The last couple of K, I was similar speed to Rowan because I emptied the tank knowing the line was there. And he just, like, I'd forgotten mentally. Like, mentally my brain is trained to be able to go for 8 hours on the bike particularly, you know. So it just reminded me how much I hold back on the bike, you know.
And you think you do that too because, you know, you've got a run coming too, but obviously in cycling there ain't no run.
It's absolutely everything you have. And I've got into a point where I thought I was quite strong on the bike, but, you know, which I am for that specific effort when you have to do that and then run. But this is just all out on the bike. So I'm so glad I went back to the racing because I've done some running off the bike the last day of that tour and also after Cadell's. And I've never felt so good running because running's the thing that hurts the most.
Yet
now I've been reminded what pain actually is. Running doesn't hurt me anymore. I've felt amazing running. And even when I get in the pool, like I'm like, whoa, you know, much more aggression. I've certainly been going quicker. So we actually saw a benefit to the racing that we never expected. And it was more what was between the ears, reminding me, you know, to toughen up a bit because I think I've got pretty soft the last few years. So
I don't know if anyone would go that far and call you a little bit soft, Cam. That's not a word
personally,
that I would use to describe you as an athlete.
Yeah, but that's just been a very good, you know, reality check for me. So, I'm really grateful that I've got the opportunity to get back and have done some racing. Obviously, we'll see what happens for the rest of the year as far as how much more we've got on the schedule. So, yeah.
All right. Well, I've got a couple of questions I want to ask you and we'll just I'll choose 4 or 5 questions and we'll just get some quick answers from you.
Kevin Hayes,
do you take any nutritional supplements? Thanks, Kevin, for writing in. But any nutritional supplements, Cam? Or are you just
I smash ketones. No, I'm joking. Okay. No, I don't. I have the thing I rely the heaviest on is electrolyte tablets. You should never neglect. You really can't neglect them. Yeah. I'm a big fan of vitamin C. Back when I used to race on the bike, you know, you took vitamin this, vitamin that, vitamin every, and I used to get sick quite a bit, which is funny. And then now I don't take anything. If I feel something coming on, I'll take 10 tablets of vitamin C to ward off a cold or something in one hit. And I haven't been sick for years. So,
you're doing something right.
I think, you know, the human body's designed to work on, I'm not a tree hugger or anything like that, a natural person, but I'd have noticed my wife's very good with her nutrition, and the more normal you keep your system, the better it'll work for you. So, pretty boring No, electrolyte tablets and vitamin C. Yeah.
But speaking of Fallon, your beautiful wife, who is expecting, you're expecting your first child in the not too distant future.
Seven weeks.
Oh my gosh, that's going quickly. Yeah. Does she do most of the cooking or
all of it? And she's, I mean, she's been to quite a few of the team camps with me, because often it's just Froomey and I, or G and I, and a couple of the guys and the coach, and often even a chef, and she'll often help the chef. So she's learnt, you know, she's seen how that all works, but she knows everything about every food, what it has in it. She now knows everything I'm doing in training, you know, if it's a hard day, a longer easy day, a recovery day, or whatever. And she just cooks it and I just eat it. She knows some days when I need fuel, other days when, you know, it's time to lose a bit of weight leading into, you know, a bigger event. And, I just eat what's put in front of me. It's great. Yeah, every man's dream.
Every person's dream. I wish my husband would do it. Not quite as sweet, you know. Now, Bab asks, how often do you eat chocolate? Now, we've talked about you and your frogs and your red frogs and your Allen snakes, but what about chocolate?
Most days I have some sort. Chocolate protein powder is pretty much all I have after a race. Oh, there's another supplement. Yeah, I love a protein shake. I find especially with Ironman training, you tend to, I mean, it doesn't matter really how good you are with time management. If you're a professional, you always take up the entire day because you waste time. So you generally finish around that 4 or 5 park and it's like dinner's at 6, but you need something to just tie you over till you have a shower and, you know, wind down a bit. And then, I love a chocolate protein. Always has a healthy scoop of Nutella in it, a couple of frozen bananas. And then as far as block of chocolate, I'm coming from a rowing background. I'm a binge everything, you know, because you have to, you know, to make weight. You're a binge drinker, you're a binge chocolate eater, you're a binge chip eater. So at the moment, I'm definitely eating chocolate every night because it's comfort food, and you don't know really what's going on. But certainly
everyone's doing it.
Yeah, on average, you know, maybe a couple of days a week. But as in chocolate, but pretty much every single day in the form of Nutella or chocolate protein powder.
Love it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tell me, Esmeralda asks, and I like this one because I know you're renowned for it a little bit, what's your epic trolling to a pro triathlete? So who's the pro triathlete you like to troll the most?
Lionel, of course.
I was going to say Lionel or Sebi.
Lionel. I mean, Lionel's just a sitting duck. You can tell that he like sits there and he fumes over it. You know that it really gets under his skin. Whereas Sebi, he's German, so he doesn't have a sense of humor anyway. So he probably doesn't even understand it when you're doing it half the time. So you got to be much more creative. But Lionel by a long way.
And obviously, you know, after Kona last year, we had some epic Insta posts between Lionel and yourself. And, you know, Lionel was at Challenge Daytona last year, and I absolutely adore Lionel and his wife, Erin. They're just such super people. But, he is fairly serious. So it's actually interesting that he does let you joke around with him because, you know, he's not – I mean, he's a great guy. I love Lionel, but he is on the serious side of things, let's be honest. So I think it's quite cool when you two actually have a little bit of, you know, banter back and forth with each other.
I think it's the Commonwealth thing, you know, and to be fair, I think Erin's the one that retaliates. I think she's the brains behind the banter when it comes to that team. He's fantastic. And, I mean, he knows that I have a huge amount of respect for him as an athlete, as I do for, you know, well, I can't say all because obviously everyone knows there's a couple of guys I don't like, but, you know, most, basically all of my peers, and he is definitely at the top of that list. And, you give as good as you get, don't you? So I expect it in return. He definitely gives it back. And, I guess the moment in Kona, I was on the front foot with him and, but, you know, we're going to see a better, you know, Lionel hasn't had the performances like he you know, for a little while. But he'll be back for sure.
Absolutely.
So everyone wants to see that, me as much as everyone else.
No, well, you know, honestly, being in Daytona at the end of last year and watching him have that epic run battle against Pablo de Pina, who we know is one of the fastest little Spanish runners in the world. I mean, he trains with Javier Gomez, so he has to. To watch those two go head-to-head on the run, I honestly thought that Pablo would get him just because Pablo is a better runner on paper.
Yeah. But
to see the fight in Lionel's, I get goosebumps now just thinking about it. The fight all over his face was something that I rarely have seen in the sport, and I've been in the sport for close to 30 years now, so it was it was truly incredible. He's he's a special athlete, that's for sure. Talking about athletes, I love the way, I mean, obviously we come from triathlon is a small sport really in the general scheme of things. And, you know, when you get a lot of these press conferences, particularly amongst the pro women, and everyone loves everyone and everyone's a friend of everyone, and no one ever says, well, you know what, I actually don't like that person, so I'm not going to lie. You are one of the only athletes I know that basically, realistically, you shouldn't like everyone. We're human beings. We're not put on this planet to be best friends with everyone. And so it was refreshing. What I find so refreshing about you is that you admit to that, you know. Not everyone on the start line is your best mate.
God, no. No, there's certainly some people everyone knows that I'm not a fan of. And I let them know that. And because it is a sport of pretty good guys. And so if you're not, you stick out like dogs, you know what's, and that's fine, you know, and
it's fine because
I'm not afraid to hide behind it. The great thing is we're all our own, so we own our own opinions, we own our own selves, you know, we could be ourselves, and so it's just probably adds to the excitement just the way it is. But no, there's a lot of guys I have a huge amount of respect and time for, and you know, and being back in cycling, that's the other thing. I mean, it's crazy the amount of guys in cycling have come up to me and, you know, been so, you know, just really complimentary of what I've done, and being able to share stories with them of what my rivals are able to do, and them be flabbergasted, you know, to understand how a race actually happens and the level. You know, these are just incredible athletes, you know, and it's awesome. And I think also it's a time when we're really taking it to another level. And I'm pretty proud of this, because if you look at the sport, the reality is the thing that's got quicker is the bike. And obviously, you know, that has been largely down to myself. But not only that, because as what people hate to, you know, realize is the fact that I'm actually there to try and win the race. I've never given a flying crap about how fast I ride the bike. No. But, of course, I'm going to go use my strength to my advantage, and I've learnt to run. Because the thing is, I was never that much better than anyone on the bike. I needed to learn to ride that hard and run well, and that's sort of what I've been able to do.
Yeah.
And as a result, now we've seen some of the great runners, particularly, you know, Jan, you know, rocks up in Kona, goes 15 minutes quicker than he's ever gone in his life.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was what was so exciting about Roth this year, to see what, I mean, I've upped my game. I mean, I wasn't turning up to play second fiddle to him. I wanted to kick his ass. But he was definitely up for, he was going to improve. He was going to be better, without a doubt. And he's improved a hell of a lot in the last year. And so I'm really proud of that. I wish I could have been at the top. And them all be chasing me.
That's right.
Yeah, but having said that, I'm it's a real honor to be a part of an evolution of the sport where we're racing now. We are racing from go to woe. It is on like Donkey Kong, and you know, 8 hours used to be quick. You know, I trotted through in Italy in 7:45. You know, I mean, it's nothing. Jan did what 7:50 in Kona. I mean, that's just, every day of the week.
You wouldn't have guessed it 10 years ago, not a chance.
No. So it's an exciting time in the sport. We're really lucky. So,
all right. So I've got another question for you, Cam, and this one's a little bit, I like this one because it's, well, it's non-controversial, so to speak, but it's How long, so it's from Scott, and it's how long can you do a wheelie on the bike for?
I can get that second pedal in, that moment where you feel like you can actually do a wheelie, and then I lose it. So I can get it off the ground, I can get one rotation of the cranks in, and then start the next one and think that I've got this nailed, and then bang, down goes the front wheel. Yeah, I'm pretty soft. I'm not much of a daredevil, never have been. And wheelies are definitely not my thing.
So can I ask you, Chris, this is a question I've got for you. So you're saying that you know, you're not much of a daredevil, but I see the way you guys descend down mountains in groups of 60 plus in the tours. And sometimes I can't even bloody watch it because I just get that freaked out. But you don't have a problem descending in big groups at ridiculous speeds?
No, you know, and interestingly, going back to cycling now, I'm actually better bike handler than I was when I was racing before. Okay. Yeah, and Tim Kerrison, because obviously the team were a bit worried about that. Amount of times they did an eye test on me was ridiculous. Yeah. And they were paranoid and they wanted me to, you know, do some extra. And then finally when I raced, and I haven't had a single issue in the races that I've had where other guys have crashed or had punches or broken stuff, I've had, you know, on the bikes, I've had nothing. And then when we're in Algarve, the tour recently, where there were some very technical descents and so forth, I was often in the first, you know, 5 to 10 riders all the time, right at the front, no one fighting me for a position. To the point where one of my teammates, Mikael Kwiatkowski, who's been a world champion, he said on the long descent, he on the bus afterwards, he said, "Gosh, I was thinking, God, poor Cam, he must be really suffering here. You know, it was lots of corners and flat out and single file and technical." And he said, and then I looked up ahead of me about five places. I was like,
"There's Cam.
He's up in front of me." And so he said, "You actually look like a normal rider."
Wow.
And I was like, "Yeah, thanks, man." I actually felt pretty comfortable on the bike now. And Tim Kerrison, my coach's theory is that I spend so much time at a high speed, you know, relatively speaking, on an average speed level in an Ironman, even if you're going in a straight line, I'm very comfortable going 40, 45, you know, K an hour now. That is 30 mile an hour, more or less, 27, whatever, you know, for the American listeners. But that, so I'm very comfortable with a bike at that speed. And consequently, in the races now, I've always had pretty good handling, but I'm good. But with regard to how that feels, you know, you just want to be around good riders. So you want to surround yourself with the best people you possibly can, because you've got no choice. Unless you're on the front, you have to trust everyone around you. And so I just have always said, I just worry about that extra inch in front of my front wheel and behind my back wheel and either side of my elbow, because really that's about as much personal space as you can wish for at some points in time. Oh, and you need to make sure that is as safe as possible, and then pray to God that everyone else is thinking the same thing. Yeah.
All right. One more question from Miguel, and he asks, in regards to time trial helmets, tail or no tail?
I mean, on a blanket, no tail. I mean, especially in an Ironman, it's very not easy to hold your head in that position. The reason I ride with a tail, I mean, I guess someone like Jan obviously does it exceptionally well. You know, you just either can happen to be naturally very comfortable in that position. I've always been pretty comfortable, you know, in a time trial position with an aggressive head position. But the moment that tail moves, you know, it's slowing you down. It's certainly not helping you. So, you know, the first year I did Kona, I had the plain cask. The last couple of years, I've had a different model that the team use and works well for me, because that's sort of where I position my head. But if the team said tomorrow, there's certainly very little data that suggests that one without a tail is any slower. It's very negligible. Okay. Yeah.
So really, for
same with sunglasses. Same with glasses and visors. To be honest, there's very little that says a visor is any quicker than a pair of glasses, or vice versa. In fact, you can get data that tells you both. Yeah.
Right. So really then, from a majority of our age group athletes out there that probably don't even realise just how much movement they're making over 180 kilometres, you'd have to go no tire would be the better
for sure. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. If I personally was buying a helmet, I'd buy one. Probably, if I was just doing a triathlon for a bit of fun, or not even fun, but semi-serious, having a helmet that didn't make me want to have to keep my head in a position that was going to give me a sore neck for the run, I'd be going without a tail.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, for us, we're going for all the speed we possibly can. We obviously do a lot of testing and, we make the decisions around that. But, the ones without the tail are definitely very, very good.
So very last question from our viewers. Thank you very much for all these questions, and keep them coming in. Yeah. Now, this one, and this is an interesting one because obviously we've been asking you a lot of cycling questions.
Yeah.
But people ask, any treadmill recommendations? So one, Cam, do you use a treadmill? And two, any treadmill in particular that you think is better than another?
I use a treadmill at the gym, yeah. Here I use the Techno Gym treadmills. I don't know, even sure if they got them in Australia. I mean, obviously the best is the Woodway. They're by far the best, really soft. But any of the gym grade ones are, fantastic. I mean, the Life Fitness or the Precor, they're all basically, it's a bit like a Ford Ranger. You know, there's the Mazda BT50, and they're all basically the same shape, just with a different logo on them. When you get to the ones at that level, I use the treadmill, once or twice a week. I find it very helpful, particularly towards the end of the week when you are tired and you're doing some sort of a brick. If I was to run on the road, I'd find it hard to get going because you're just sort of lethargic with fatigue. And if you get on the treadmill and just put it on whatever pace, you've just got to do it. And you'll do it. You know, that's a time where it tricks you into making your legs tick over, and the training benefit is much better. And so I find the treadmill can be very handy in those circumstances, obviously also when the weather's crap. But I guess my favorite interval set, and it's really just a fartlek set, but I named it the Mayweather because I'm a big fan of boxing and really martial arts in general. But the Floyd Mayweather, and it's 12 times 3 minutes on, 1 minute off, so a boxing match.
Love it.
and that's and I do, you try and do that, the 3 minutes on it, around threshold. You want to be breathing pretty hard, and then take a minute really nice and easy to recover. And, it's a good
12 times through?
Yeah. So 48 minutes, bit of a warm-up. It's just an easy way to bang out an hour, and often you got an hour run, so a bit of a warm-up, cool down, and there you go.
Well, there you go. There's everyone's run session for today. So all of you people that are stuck indoors, can't get out.
Go and do the Mayweather. Yeah.
Go and do the Mayweather session brought to you by Cam Wirth. I love it.
Yep.
I'd say I would go and try it in the garage. We've got a treadmill there, but I'd be lying. But I'm I'd send Justin out to do it instead.
I'd do it to test it. If you set a decent pace for yourself, it creeps up on you in the championship rounds. You can tell why they call them the championship rounds, guys fatigue. Rounds 9, 10, 11 and 12, it gets pretty 12 tough.
Twelve times anything is pretty tough. But I'd like to see some of our viewers at least give it a crack. So that would be very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, listen, Cam, I have talked your ear off again. You've talked mine off. I'm not sure better talker out of both of us, but I think you stumped me today. I hate to
Oh, that's good.
That.
Yeah, that's all right. I just tried to, give you as much information as I possibly could.
I love it. Our listeners love it. Cam, you are a breath of fresh air in this sport. You really are. And I've been saying that ever since you first decided to take on triathlon, and it's a pleasure having you. I hope that we get to see you out there on the road in both triathlon and cycling this year. Let's hope by September or even August that we are back on track to hold some events this year. But thank you for your time. You are an angel. So good luck with everything. Please pass on my respects to Fallon, your beautiful wife, and I'm glad everything's going well. And 7 weeks you said 7 weeks to go?
7 weeks, yep. Start of May. Yep.
Wow. Yep. That's going to change things up a bit, Cam.
Yeah, my wife's going to be busy. She's going to be really busy.
Yeah, yeah, right. I'm going to have a word to Fallon about that one.
No, I'm excited. I really am. I can't wait. Especially as it gets closer, you're just like, wow, this is a little human. That's pretty cool. So,
thanks again, Dylan. And
pleasure.
For all of our listeners out there, if any of you have got any questions for any of our athletes that we are interviewing, please send them in and I will try and get to all of them. But from all of us here at Coffee Calls with Belinda, thank you, Cam.
And, pleasure.
I shall speak to you again, I'm sure.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Cam. See ya.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to Coffee Calls with Belinda. I really hope you enjoyed listening. If you'd like to continue listening and stay updated on our latest podcasts, then please subscribe. It would also be great if you could rate our podcast and leave us a review. If you have any specific questions you'd like me to ask the athletes, then please send through to the following email address, podcast@challenge-family.com. The making of these podcasts would not be possible without the wonderful help of our great partners, Powerbar, Otso, Zone 3, Lubos Bilic at LB Training, Sport No Limit Group, and Velosoc. But for now, thanks so much for listening, and I'll be back soon for another coffee.